They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew.
Joining me on the Commons today is an old friend, Marjorie Murray, from all the way from California. Marjorie, it has been a donkey's age since you've been on, but I know you've been extraordinarily busy doing some incredible work. So for all my listeners who have not heard you and don't know who you are, Marjorie Murray is the president and the founder of the Center for California Homeowner Association Law. You have a website, calhomelaw.org. We'll give it again. There's a lot of incredible information on there. And so finally, you've got time to breathe, and you've decided that you're going to give that time to sharing what you've been up to. So thank you so much for joining us today, Marjorie.
Well, thank you for asking me, Sue. Yes, we have been extremely busy here in California working on legislation that is promoting good bills in Sacramento and campaigning to defeat bad bills. And what I was particularly interested in sharing with your listeners was one of the very bad bills this session on homeowner association elections, AB 1799. And for anyone who wants to read the bill, they can find it on the State of California website. I'll say and spell that website link, which is leginfo.ca.gov. That's leginfo.ca.gov.
And the bill itself is AB 1799?
That's correct. And the author is Chad Mayes. That's spelled M-A-Y-E-S. He is a Republican assemblyman from Riverside County. He's actually up for re-election in November.
And he came up with a bad bill.
Well, and we were very disappointed to see a Republican carry this bill because, as you may remember, association elections in California are governed by a very fine set of statutes put in place 10 years ago as a result of a bipartisan effort, and they were actually initiated by a Republican legislator named Jim Batten, also from Riverside County. And this bill would have undercut many of the protections put in place. But I'm sort of getting ahead of our topic, I think, here.
That's okay. We can go back and forth.
Okay.
We'll go back and forth, and we'll fill in, plug in all the holes. Not a problem. So, all right. So
what can I tell you first?
Okay. So the bill, so you had some really good legislation in this bill, and this has been one of my fears, is that once you've got a bill in place, they can come in and tweak it and turn a good bill into something really awful. And then you've spent how many years fighting this bill? I mean, it's been a long time.
Well, the statutes governing association elections have been in place for 10 years now. They became effective in 2006. And they were the result of a three-year effort by all stakeholders, and by that I mean by the association industry and by consumer advocates, including ourselves. So it was a lengthy, difficult process that involved many trips to Sacramento, a lot of fine-tuning, and some compromises on our part. But we finally managed to come up with a very good set of statutes, which are actually modeled on public elections. They put in place important consumer protections. For example, up to that point, the ballots in association elections were not even secret. So whoever could get a hold of the ballots could open them, read them, toss them, not tabulate them, etc. So the statutes created these important consumer protections like the secret ballot, which of course we expect in public elections. They also created a role and an entity called the Inspector of Elections, modeled on the Registrar of Voters, which we expect to be in place in every city, in every county in California. So these important consumer protections were put in place. The laws became effective in 2006. But ever since then, periodically, every 2 or 3 years, the industry initiates a bill to undercut those protections.
Okay.
And this year, AB 1799 was the third such assault on the statutes. The last one was AB 968, which would have said that small associations didn't need to hold elections at all, that they could just sit around in somebody's living room and informally choose who was going to be on the board.
So much for democracy up close and personal.
Right.
Right.
So the important thing to keep in mind is that the laws governing California associations, and keep in mind that California has more associations than any other state. We have about 52,000 associations now. More than a quarter of the state lives in them. And the statutes governing associations, that is, the set of statutes called Davis-Sterling and also the California Corporations Code, make no distinction between large and small associations. Those statutes apply equally whether the association is comprised of 4 units or 6,000 units. The bill this session, AB 1799, was, as I said, the third assault on the election statute. And it was a very difficult fight, but I'm glad to say that we were able to mobilize homeowners in order to defeat it. So what can I tell you? Would you like me to start with the importance of elections and associations or with the provisions of the bill?
Well, I want to talk a little bit about the bill itself and what it would have done, because I think, as you mentioned, it's CAI that starts these legislative bills and finds a legislator to carry the bill. So in all the other 49 states that have them, including the District of Columbia, they're going to be emulating these bills. Oh, well, we tried this in California. So let's take the language from California and let's take it to Florida. Let's take it to Arizona. Let's bring it to Virginia and see if we can get it passed over here. So what I want to do is just briefly talk a little bit about what the bill would have done, let people know what to look for, because so many of the homeowners are brand new at this and they really don't know what they're dealing with.
Well, this was an industry bill, and it was in California. When we're talking about the homeowner association industry, we are talking about the Community Associations Institute, which I will refer to by its acronym of CAI. But we are also talking about the Property Managers Trade Group, which goes by the acronym of CACM, California Association of Community Managers.
Yeah.
Now, these are the property managers, but
What about ECHO?
I'm sorry?
What about ECHO, Marjorie?
Oh, I haven't gotten there yet.
Okay.
CACM is the limited universe of property managers, and what I mean by that is that they are a trade group representing the interests of property managers, but generally only the largest property managers. So I believe their numbers are now about 1,400 members. They don't represent small property managers generally, what we sometimes refer to as mom-and-pop property managers who would manage associations of, you know, 25 or 75 units. There is a third group, which is called ECHO, which recently changed its name to Educational Community of Homeowners. Now, the interesting thing in relation to this bill is that ECHO actually opposed, and so we were quite grateful for their opposition.
Wow.
They thought the procedures laid out in the legislation were far too convoluted, and convoluted to the point also of really being nonsensical, that it would be extremely difficult if you handed the legislation to a board and said, here is your roadmap to organizing your next election, that a board wouldn't be able to follow it, and we would have to agree with that assessment. So they did oppose the bill, although they had their own separate reasons for opposing it. So it might be very helpful to your listeners, Shu, if we talked about what the bill would do.
Yes, please.
The bill empowered incumbent boards to do two things, three things: to set qualifications establishing who could run for a board seat. And then, if the incumbent board determined that there were enough qualified, and I'm putting the word qualified in quotes, enough qualified candidates to fill the vacant board positions, then the board had a second power, which was to cancel the elections altogether as unnecessary. So it was a twin set of powers: to establish qualifications for running for a board seat, and then after identifying people who met the threshold qualifications and determining that there were sufficient candidates to fill the vacant board seats, the second power was to cancel elections altogether as unnecessary. And then the third power was to establish qualifications to vote. Now, the way this was framed was that if the board didn't have to hold elections, that it would save homeowner associations a great deal of money. So it was presented not in terms of the board's new powers so much as a cost-saving measure. And unfortunately, the assembly bought this argument. So it had a successful run on the assembly side. So this was, and, you know, for advocates who are listening from other states, this is the issue, the framing issue that I would be on the lookout for. That is, framing limitations on elections as a way to save money. Although the irony is, in one of its hearings on the Senate side, the CAI lobbyist was actually asked by one of the state senators, well, if this is a cost-saving measure, how much money are you going to save? What does it actually cost to run an election? And the lobbyist said, well, we surveyed our members, and we have determined that it costs about a dollar a member to run an election. Well, this was a nonsensical argument, because most associations in California, about somewhere between 75 and 80% of them, are 70 units or less. And so that means associations would be saving on average, if we're going by his $1 figure, they would be saving $70 a year, which is hardly a cost savings. And then the second argument that the lobbyist proposed was that all the cost savings would then be plowed back into the operating budget and used for other purposes. And the same senator said, well, is that actually in the legislation? That is, the cost savings would then be diverted into the operating budget. Is that in the legislation? And the answer was no. So the cost savings was mythical in two ways. the cost savings was negligible, and if there were to be cost savings, the statute, the legislation didn't require that it be reinvested into the operating budget.
They do come up with some doozies sometimes, don't they, Marjorie?
Well, you know, it had the potential, I suppose, to be an effective argument if they wanted to go down that path and frame it as a cost-saving measure. They had no data to support the argument.
But, you know, if you go back to what they've always said, and they've always really gone after the homeowners for not voting because the homeowners were, quote-unquote, apathetic, and if you don't exercise your right to vote, then you're going to kill this wonderful form of housing. And now they're going out of their way to do away with the elections altogether. You know where we're headed with this, don't you? They want to have professional board members so that homeowners have absolutely no control over anything.
Well, it's a truly critical issue in California for a number of reasons. And as we have discussed before on the program, associations are meant to be self-governing entities.
Right.
That's how they're marketed.
Right.
That they're not co-ops, they're not co-housing, but, and even the industry will say this, these are people who have come together in some sort of voluntary fashion to live in a congenial way in order to protect property values and to have this form of not very well described type of communal living. Now, whether that's a reality or not, we could spend the entire hour here debating that.
One word,
but
no.
One thing I will point out is that associations in California, and the advocates in other states can also speak to this, California associations function as quasi-governmental entities. There's no two ways about that. And this fact has been reinforced by a number of California appeals court decisions. And these decisions were also referenced in the Senate Judiciary analysis of the bill when it came to the Judiciary Committee this year. That associations are quasi-governmental entities, that they have powers, some of which outstrip those of cities and counties. They have, as we have discussed many times, the power to foreclose, and not just the power to foreclose, but to foreclose with even greater speed than that of counties, which are foreclosing in order to collect delinquent taxes. So in order for these quasi-governmental entities to have any check on power, homeowners need to have the right to vote. And it needs to be an unfettered right to vote. And that speaks to the crux of this bill, that this bill would have given the board these two extraordinary powers, the right to determine who's qualified to vote and who's qualified to run for office, and after those determinations are made, the right to cancel elections altogether. That's a lethal combination of powers, which leaves the homeowner voter totally unprotected.
Yeah.
California has the state, even though associations are a creature of the state has no regulatory authority over them. So the regulatory authority, to the extent that it exists, really rests with the homeowner's ability to vote. That's how they call leadership to account. And any legislation which checks that power, our center will fight, and homeowners have made clear in their campaign against this bill that they will go out of their way totally to fight legislation of this nature.
How long has this, you've been fighting this bill for a while, Marjorie, right?
No, it was introduced only this year.
Oh, it was introduced this year?
Yeah, it was introduced in February of this year. And the interesting thing about it is that the property managers actually came to us in January with this legislative idea and said, would we have a problem with a bill of this nature? And we said, absolutely, we would have a problem with it. And we encouraged them not to promote the idea and, you know, not to shop it to find a legislator to carry it. And we didn't hear anything more about it until late February when it was actually introduced. So we were very disappointed that even though we were approached in early January for our thoughts on the legislative idea, and we were very clear that we would oppose such a measure, that it was introduced anyway. And we were speaking not just for the center, but we were speaking for homeowners who are, I mean, as with their right to vote in public elections, will guard that right and the right to use it.
You did a very good job of mobilizing the California homeowners to actually contact their legislators and ask them to vote against it. That's something that I think a lot of states have a hard time with.
Well, yes, it was extremely gratifying because homeowners understood, homeowners read the bill. We're always glad to see that.
Yeah, that's a plus. It's always.
Yes, they read the bill. They asked a lot of questions about it. They wrote long emails and copied the center on them.
Oh, good.
They wrote long emails to the author. They wrote long emails to their own legislators. They made phone calls. And they came to Sacramento with us to lobby the various members of the committees that heard the bill. The bill was heard in Assembly Housing, then it was heard in Senate Housing and in Senate Judiciary. And they made trips to Sacramento on their own time, at their own cost, to meet with us as we went office to office. And some of these committees are quite large. So, and homeowners are quite eloquent. So I would encourage the advocates in other states, in Arizona, in Florida, in Texas, who I know are already doing this, to mobilize homeowners to meet with lawmakers and to speak with their own voice, because homeowners can be extremely eloquent. They know the consequences of having their right to vote undermined. They understand it.
I think Texas some years ago had legislation, and I'm not sure if it's been codified or not, I think it has, that if you owe or if you have a violation notice filed against you, that you lose your right to vote. And in a court of law, they had one manager who admitted to right before elections sending out a whole slew of violation notices to the people she knew would probably vote against her. And so that, I mean, that is just absolutely incredible.
Well, it may be incredible, but it's extremely common.
No, I know it is.
And this is one of the reasons that we fought this bill so hard. Because property managers and incumbent boards and the advisors to boards, some of whom are association law firms, will tell boards that they have the right under law, which they don't have, to establish these fantasy qualifications that have the effect of disenfranchising voters and preventing people from running for board seats. And of course, it's no coincidence that the people who are prevented from running are people who question board policies or board
management
or the property manager.
Right.
So there have been some interesting cases in California on this point, and in our letter of opposition, we brought up one of these cases where the board went so far as to amend its bylaws to say that anyone that had sued the association, even in small claims court, in the past 6 years,
wow,
no matter what the outcome of the case, whether they won or lost, would not be able to run for a board seat. Now, that's really going to an extreme. To amend governing documents to say that you can't run for a board seat if in the past 6 years you have sued the association, even in small claims court. So the object of that was to keep off the board people who wanted to inspect board financial records. And that, of course, is a very common occurrence where homeowners want to inspect financial records to find out how their assessments are being spent. And in this case, homeowners were being assessed $75,000 per unit, per home, for a special assessment.
Wow.
And they wanted to know what the spending plan was, because this was multi-million-dollar assessment. And the board refused to give them the records. So the homeowners went into small claims court, which they can do under California law, in order to have the court order the board to release the records. And the board retaliated by saying, if you've sued in small claims court, you can't run for a board seat. So the homeowners banded together, 25 homeowners. They got a court injunction to stop the election and to ask the court to order a new election in which their names would be on the ballot. So all of that succeeded. And that case is also cited in the Senate Judiciary Analysis of AB 1799. In other words, that boards assert that they have the power to name qualifications, to establish thresholds that have to be met to vote and run for a board seat. And it's a power that they continually abuse. So that was the foundation on which we fought this bill, that even if we grant boards limited power to establish qualifications, that they have abused that power, and now they want more power, which would have allowed them to cancel elections altogether.
You know, I live in a really old association. The governing documents are just a few pages long, three or four pages long, nothing spectacular, and you can imagine that it doesn't give the board all kinds of powers. But one of the things, if you read the declaration for Lake Braddock, what you will find is that the homeowners seem to have a whole lot of rights and authority. And the board's rights and authorities are very, very limited. So the way the whole thing was set up initially, in the very beginning, was that this was a community, quote-unquote, community, where people got together and made the decisions, which is why CAI has always said that associations are democracy up close and personal. You have more control over your own immediate area than at any other time. And if you look at what it was intended to do at the very beginning, you could actually make an argument for that. But over the years, the decades, they have chipped away at that. They have made it such a convoluted mess. And the homeowners have lost every time, which is one of the reasons I don't particularly like legislation, because even if it starts out as good legislation, they'll come in and chip away at it and turn it around, which is what they tried to do here.
Well, I think that's true, Shu, that, you know, you get a good set of statutes in place, as we did 10 years ago, that govern elections. But we have done that in other areas as well. There are good statutes governing a homeowner's right to inspect and copy records. There are, in a third area, better protections when it comes to assessment collection and foreclosure. But I think this is just a normal part of political life, which is you can expect that the statutes are not set in concrete. We'd like to think they are. We'd like to think the consumer protections are immutable, but as in any other level of government, I mean, if you're talking about a city or a county or other areas of state government or of federal life, people will come in and try to erode the protections. That's to be expected. So part of our job as advocates is to protect the protections that we've put in place. So that's just a normal part of the legislative life. So it's not a surprise to me, but I would think that the industry by now would be aware that we're not going to let the protections go, not without a fight, as we prove this session. We'll do everything in our power to make sure that the legal protections that we put in place stay there. So that doesn't surprise me. It doesn't discourage me. It doesn't, I mean, it's just a normal part of political life.
I know. Politics makes strange bedfellows, don't they? No, but I want to point out that you are very astute, you're very knowledgeable, and you have done an absolutely incredible job of following all of the bills coming through. You have written extensively about them. You've analyzed them. You've educated your constituents about them, and you've done a really good job. Unfortunately, there's only one Marjorie Murray in the country.
So, oh, I don't know about that.
No, I tell you, you're unique. You're different. But, you know, there are some other good advocates throughout. But I think in some respect, I mean, you've really done a good job doing that. I know that Beanie and her people down in Florida have done a good job. I know that Jan has done a fairly good job. I know that in Arizona, I think it's starting to come together, but that's how many states we've mentioned and how many more are out there. And people are just starting in some of these other states, just starting to get a feel for what's going on and starting to understand the issues.
Well, I think that's always true. No matter what issue you're taking on, whether it's foreclosure or voting rights or children's rights, anything. I mean, you're always going to start, I won't say always, but you start at the beginning. You start where you can start. And in the beginning, it's difficult because you discover how much one issue is entangled with another issue. But I would say one of the important elements is, first of all, self-education. Learn as much as you can about the statutes governing associations in your own state. And the other is to find like-minded people, to find other organizations that are working, maybe not on homeowner associations, but that are working on related issues,
yeah,
like affordable housing.
Yeah, you've
and
done
in
a good
California,
job.
Affordable housing is a massive topic, and there are many, many organizations working on it. And also, so you have to do some prospecting and find out who in California is working on housing issues, because they are natural allies. And in California, if you're talking about affordable ownership housing, that housing is going to be put into a common interest development or a homeowner association.
They're all going there.
So, sorry?
I said they're all going in there. through mandates, local municipal mandates.
So that may also be true in other states, I would guess.
Yeah, it is.
In Texas and in Florida.
And in Virginia.
Illinois and elsewhere.
Yeah, all over.
Right. So developers of affordable housing are going to be natural allies for people who are working on homeowner association issues. So, as you know, Shu, the topic of homeowner association law is broad and deep, and so you need as many allies as possible. One of the things I do want to mention, and this is reverting back to AB 1799 and the motivations for it, which we haven't talked about, and again, I'm sure this is true in other states as well, common interest developments are big business in California. And if you frame this not as a cost-saving issue, but as a business issue, you can see why incumbent boards and the two sponsors, that is CAI and the property managers, want control over association boards and who's sitting on them. Because associations in California, of course, like elsewhere, collect assessments. And in California, they now control somewhere in the neighborhood of $12 billion in cash. That's billion with a B. So that money is sitting in bank accounts, operating accounts, reserve accounts. That money is used to fund contracts. And contracts are awarded by boards. So it makes a huge difference to property managers and to all the vendors who belong to CAI. It makes a huge difference who's sitting on the board
and
whether or not they are going to be friendly and amenable to funding contracts.
Yeah. Well,
so go ahead.
No, go on.
No, I was at the end of that sentence.
I'm trying to be polite here. Marjorie, no. I just read that for 2015, the actual dollar amount generated by HOAs nationally went up to $85 billion from the previous year. It was $70 billion in 2014. 2015, $85 billion nationally. That's a lot of money.
Well, and a good chunk of that is being generated in California.
Yeah,
It's really hard to keep track of the number of common interest developments which are being built over in San Francisco, for example, where old houses and old apartment buildings are being torn down or else the apartment buildings are being converted to common interest developments, to homeowner associations. And so each one of those units is going to be another little money-generating entity. So if we're going to talk about this bill as a business bill, then and we frame it within the context of the amount of money that common interest developments generate annually in California, we are talking about big business.
It's huge.
We're not talking just about the initial sales, but we're talking about the amount of money that each unit generates in terms of property taxes and in terms of homeowner assessments. And, of course, those assessments go up every year, and often each unit is levied a special assessment, as in the court case I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, that's so, a big one, $75,000 per unit. That's
And that is not unusual.
No, it's not. I've heard of higher ones as well, but
But so it's not just the amount, but the frequency with which that level of assessment is levied in individual associations. So it's very important for any vendor, including a property manager, that has a contract with an association, they want that contract renewed and increased.
Yes.
And the only entity with the power to do that is the board. So so they need a reliable board in place.
And one thing we haven't talked about, we've talked about all of this money, we've talked about the business, we've talked about contracts, we've talked about management companies, we've talked about all of that. But one thing that we're seeing a lot of, and I think what we're getting is just the tip of the iceberg, is the amount of money that's being embezzled. We're talking hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars a pop across the country.
Well, yes, we're aware of that, Shu. Although that didn't come into play in relation to our bill, but
no.
That is certainly a topic of great concern to us. And we have cataloged quite a few of those cases on our website. If your listeners go to our website.
Go on.
I was just going to say, just use the search term embezzlement. It will call up the embezzlement cases, which we have cataloged. The good thing about those cases is that when they are identified, and sometimes they are identified by a conscientious board member who realizes that on reading the financial reports that the dollars don't match up and they start doing their own sleuthing, that the treasurer may be embezzling, or the property manager, or a vendor subcontracted to the property manager. But in any event, you know, it's identified and it's brought to the attention of the county district attorney. The district attorneys in California have been very good about prosecuting those cases. But the thing that's the missing ingredient here is the embezzlement prevention. And one of the trends we find, which is very disturbing, is that board members often cannot get the financial records from the property manager.
Yeah.
But the records are in the custody of the property manager, who will not release them or update them or review them in any meaningful way with the board directors. So board directors are really not able to fulfill their fiduciary duties.
You know, sometimes...
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, so the embezzlement issue is kind of tangential to AB 1799, but of course it is an issue of great concern to us because of the amount of money in play here in California.
I want to go back
and
to...
That,
we keep wanting to just use the same airspace. I want to go back, Marjorie, to when I was talking about my governing documents, where there are no limits on what the homeowner can see. So in my declaration, the homeowner has a right to look at everything. The statute has come along and sort of given the board some things that they can keep from the homeowners. But that, if I go back to my declaration, which supersedes the law in this case, then I have a right to do that. And I think every declaration should get every homeowner every single right, because the embezzlements are millions and millions of dollars across the country. But I can tell you that that's just a drop in the bucket, because so many board members are terrified of letting people know that that there's been embezzlement. In fact, in my association, it happened. And the board said, no, we're going to keep it quiet because then our property values will fall. And that's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. So,
well, I think that is mythical. I mean, I think boards can really make a strong case for, we uncovered it, we have put protections in place, and this is a way to protect property values, because now we have protections in place that weren't there before.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I absolutely agree.
I think that cuts a couple of ways.
Yeah.
You know, it's, boards don't have to be timid. They have to be assertive.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I so agree with you, because it is a problem. And unless we put it out there, if we keep minimizing it, it's going to be a, you know, it's just a few million, you know, don't worry about it. A few million out of 85 billion?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you concerned about it, right? But I don't think it's a few million. I think it's a lot bigger than that. And you wonder why associations have to resort to special assessments of, you know, $75,000 in your case. It was $125,000 in an association down in Florida a few years ago, and I haven't kept track of the numbers over the years. But I mean, that's not chump change. That's your kid's college.
Yeah, not at all.
That's your kid's
college. Well, you know, before we, I know that we're coming to the end of our conversation, Shu, but one of the things I wanted to emphasize to advocates in other states is, you know, the importance of identifying bills as early as possible in a legislative session. And that's another reason for finding and becoming friends with other housing advocates in the state. Because, as I said, this is a big job, but keeping track of common interest development legislation and housing legislation. And sometimes bills go through committees that you may not always track, like a bill may go through a banking committee.
Right.
And so it's really important to have people you can call on who are doing the same thing you're doing, which is identifying and tracking bills. And it's a big job to identify them, and you want to identify them early on before they get a foothold in the legislature. So that might be worth a conversation at some point, you know, how you go about doing that, finding friends and, you know, recruiting allies. It can certainly be done, and it's a necessary element of doing the legislative work.
Well, we have a few
and
minutes.
Also, it's necessary to have a presence in Sacramento, in our case.
Yeah.
So you have to be present at the state capitol, talking to legislators and talking to staff and making the case either for or against a particular bill. And as you said, I'm only one person, so I have lots of friends.
You had lots of friends. And you're not that far from Sacramento, are you?
I'm sorry?
Are you far from Sacramento? How far are you?
I'm about 85 miles.
So that's not that close either. Because I know people have flown up from Southern California to go to Sacramento. So that's...
Yeah, that is really a challenge.
Yeah.
But we did have people come from Southern California this session to testify against the bill.
Against this particular bill?
Pardon?
Against this particular bill?
Yes.
AB 1799.
So we were very grateful for that. Yeah.
Did you ever call, was it Mays, Chad Mays, and talk to him and ask him to pull the bill before you went through all that trouble? Or?
Oh, many times. Well, that's an interesting question. We talked to his legislative director many times, and we also asked to sit down with the sponsors of the bill. We asked that very early on because that's the usual method. If there are opponents, and we were the opponents, and this is what we did with the original election legislation 10 years ago. We all met in Sacramento 2 and 3 times a month, sat around a table, talked about the bill, drafted it, inserted the necessary commas and language and whatever. So we asked to do the same with AB 1799. And the author refused. The author said, oh, well, the sponsors don't know very much about elections, so they're really not available to do this. What we're going to do is send the bill over to staff at the Assembly Housing Committee. So this is not really playing by the rules. This is not playing by the rules. And so that only made us more determined to defeat the legislation.
Yeah.
Yes, we asked him many times, and homeowners flooded the office of the author with requests to pull the bill, including homeowners from his district, pointing out that he's up for re-election and that they were prepared to vote against him and vote for his opponent. But that didn't hold any sway with him, unfortunately.
Well, one of the times I did that, I called one of the legislators who had an absolutely horrible bill in there, and I said, "What the hell are you thinking?" And he stuck CAI on me. He sort of went, blah, 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 blah. And the next thing I know is I'm getting calls from CAI talking to me about it. So what can we do to get you to approve this bill or to work with us on this? I had it pulled. I wasn't
well,
very
that's,
nice.
That's the ideal, of course, is to persuade the author that this is a bad bill. And, well, I mean, there are various strategies. One is, please pull the bill if you're not going to meet with us in order to see if the bill can be fixed. And in this case, the bill couldn't be fixed. I mean, there was no way because the bill went to the very heart of voting rights and the right to run for election. And those are so crucial to self-governance that there's no way you could amend the bill to make it better because it was this deliberate attack on voting rights and the right to run.
So how do you qualify a candidate? By the color of their skin, the color of their eyes, the shape of their nose, their height?
There were no limitations on it, which, of course, was the problem.
You know,
it left it up to each association board to decide what the qualifications were. Well, I mean, that leads to all kinds of discrimination and disenfranchisement.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a beauty contest as opposed to making sure you've got some good candidates in there running the place. And that's what you don't want is a beauty contest in an HOA.
Well, it's a contest. It's not even a contest. It gives the appearance of a process to choose candidates when actually you're just choosing compliance. You're choosing obedience.
Yeah, that's people a good way of putting it, yeah.
People who are not going to question anything, who are not going to rock the boat, who are not going to ask questions about financial reports or board policies that lead to discrimination. I mean, all kinds of things. And of course, we've spent a good deal of time talking about how boards have control over assessments that are in the bank, but they have control over everything else as well, including board policies and procedures, board policies on assessments, and whether assessments are going to be levied, how they're going to be collected, which law firm to retain, which property manager to hire. They need, you know, sound policies on the disabled who live in homeowner associations. I mean, boards have broad-ranging powers like cities and counties, which is not just an analogy. Associations are really quasi-governmental entities. And as I said in the very beginning of this interview, the California appeals courts have established that idea repeatedly in appellate opinions. And the extent to which the industry attacks voting rights, I hope we prove this session are going to be met with the utmost resistance.
Marjorie, thank you so much for doing that and for helping educate the rest of us out here who are going through some of the same struggles as you've done. I think you've done an incredible job. I hope you get a chance to take a little bit of a break now, because I know you've been working hard, and I know it's been a long time, been trying to get you on the show for quite a while now, and you've been
busy.
Well,
that has been because of the legislative work,
I know.
Too, no question. And the legislature is actually now in recess, although they're in recess for a month, but this is when we play catch up. So
I'm so glad you I'm so glad you decided to join us. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much. And if advocates in other states, you know, want to have a phone roundtable on the elections issue, we would be more than happy to do it.
I think that's a great idea.
We could do it by conference call.
That's a great idea. I have a conference call number. We can do that.
Great.
Thank you, Marjorie.
Great.
Thank you so much,
welcome,
and all the very best.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for the invitation.
Oh, thanks, bye.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.